Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 328, and we shall continue from where we stopped last time in chapter 9 of the book of Numbers and verse 7. At this time, some of the people of Israel that were unclean by reason of defilement, touching the dead body, wanting to keep the Passover, obeying the law of God that told them that all Israelites must keep the Passover or else, you know, they'll be cut off. And so they brought it before Moses, and they wanted to know, should that keep them away, apart from the congregation of God, from bringing the offering of God on the Passover, should that be a reason for it? And Moses, at this point, he is a lawgiver. What is a lawgiver? A person that receives the law from God, that is, the godly lawgiver. We're not talking about human lawgivers that do their own thing. But he does not lean to his own understanding. He does not take, authority to himself. He does not personify or personalize authority. As a matter of many is. He doesn't say, well, God speaks only through me and I'm going to tell you what to do. Oh, no. That's not Moses. That's not a genuine lawgiver of God. He says, okay, well, that's something new. I'll have to go to God and ask him what about it, because that's what made, that is Moses a lawgiver. Lawgiver, that means giving the law of God, not giving his own law. That, in essence, is the role of the ministry. Their position is not there to invent their own ideas and their own concept and tell people what to do and where to go, Their job is to say, okay, well, if you've got a question, let's go to the Bible and read it together and see what God has to say about the matter. And when people don't do it, well, that's when you have divisions, because each one is going to lean to his own understanding, and that's how ministers also end up in that position where we have people who are in the business of ministry shopping. They don't like the opinion of this guy, they go to somebody else. When you come to ask of God and His law, you don't need to do it. You just want to know exactly what God said, and you do not want to know, what is the interpretation of that particular person of what God said, but exactly what God said about this matter. That's what a lawgiver is all about. And all of them, who sit in the seat of Moses, that was their responsibility, to be lawgivers by directing them to the Word of God and not to their own. And the Pharisees were faithful in that to a point. And after that, they began to invent their own things. And that's what Christ was telling them. They sit in the seat of Moses, whatever they tell you to do, do. That means when they direct you to the law of Moses as a lawgiver, and what he said because of what God gave him, and that's himself standing there in person speaking, that you do, that you better do, And for that matter, whoever says that, doesn't make any difference in what position he is. If he's leading you to the Word of God and shows you, well, this is what it says here, be it your father, your older person that you know, somebody you respect, anyone, the law of God is the law of God, And Moses was not about to invent a new precedent doing his own thing. And he forbade Israel to do it likewise, and obviously he forbade the priesthood and the Levites to do their own thing. You got a question, you don't know anything about it, go to God, he'll give you the answer. And when people do not have that kind of relationship with God, then they are stuck, and now they begin to invent their own doctrines. And that's unfortunately where we are today, to a large degree. And so Moses says unto them, stay you, that I may hear what the Lord will command concerning you. And that's the way it works. And so he told Israel later on in Deuteronomy, as we shall read it, just like I'm a lawgiver and I'm giving you an example of how to give a law. If I don't know it, I go to God and he gives it to me, and I don't bring my own ideas here, and I don't, speak my own words. The day will come when God is going to raise a lawgiver just like me, who is going to exactly follow in the same example. He's not going to come and speak his own words and, invent a new religion, And that's what Christ said. The words that I speak are not mine. Whatever the Father told me to do, that's exactly what I'm doing. That's what I'm telling you. And this is what made him also the lawgiver, just like unto Moses. And this is what the ministry should have followed in the footsteps of Moses and Jesus Christ, the ultimate lawgiver, that is ultimate, between us and the Father. And yet when people do not follow that, well, naturally that's when you have the divisions. They all do their own things. And the whole thing God spoke through them. They've been doing it for 2,000 years. And that's what Christ warned us about. A lot of people are going to come in my name, just like lawgivers, I'll tell you what the Word of God says. Well, the law of God says, and they're going to deceive many. How? They're going to depart from my law, my instructions, my commandments, from Moses. So all that I've spoken to Moses and to the disciples later on, and they're going to speak their own words. That's how new religions come about. And they're doing it to this day. Unfortunately, and many of us have been trapped into that because we hear a good measure of the truth there, and then we think, well, everything else is okay. And we do not prove all things. And God commanded us, prove all things. You see, I find myself many times making mistakes and saying things I should not say. And I listen to myself and say, what on earth have I said that for? And I have to go back and rectify it. And as a matter of fact, just the other day, a long time ago, I gave that lecture, or several of them, about the calendar. And I was reading one date wrongly because it says 4:30. You see, the man was 4:30, ever. And I wrote there without thinking, clearly, 43. It's not what it says. It says 4:30. That means he was 34. And so, when you go to that point there, maybe you should go through it now while we're thinking about it. And I don't know if many of you had written down a chart, as I suggested at the time, so you can see it in front of you and see it. But anyway, when we began with the name of Ever, Ever was number 14 in the list, and it says in the English, when he was 4:30, and I put 43, that was a mistake. It's not a matter of ignorance, just a mistake, not thinking clearly at that point. And so from that point on, you have a 7 years difference there. In other words, you have to take 7 years off all the dates that came after that. And basically, if you go back to that number 14 of Ever, and instead of 43, if you wrote 43, just write 34, and then you're going to make an adjustment of 7 years for the next several people until you reach Joseph, number 23. And in each case, obviously, you're going to have 7 years less. So, somebody that listened to it was more attentive, because that's in his mind, to be more attentive to numbers, since he's a CPA, and he caught that. His name is Herman Smink, a very fine fellow, devout, and devout to the word and what it says. And he caught it, and he emailed me about it and took care of that. But somehow didn't have the opportunity, or didn't think about it after that to even mention it. Anyway, this seems to be like a good opportunity to do it now. So, always realize that all of us are capable of making mistakes. Either slip of the tongue, or we didn't think much about it, or we just said something and not really reading something properly. And therefore, it is important, if we go to the law of God, with all due respect to anybody who said that, still check on them. You see, not in suspicion, not in bad attitude, not in whom do you think you are? But, as it says about the Bereans, have that spirit of nobility. They were more noble, it says. And when you are more noble, you don't speak evil of people, and you don't put down people and say, oh, you're stupid, you don't know what you're talking about. You see? You're ignorant, and I'm wiser than you are, and smarter, those kind of things. No, you just, in the spirit of humility and meekness, you go and check it, and see whether those things are so. And if you have an opportunity, with all due respect, you said, okay, can I show you something that I saw here in the law? Maybe you, just made a slip of the tongue, whatever it may be. Oh, this is what it says here. You see? Like brethren, discuss these matters. And you say, oh, okay, fine, no problem. Thank you for that. And you continue. You see? And that's the way genuine lawgivers of God function. And when people came to Moses and told him about, certain things that he was doing that was not necessarily the best way of doing it, we have an example of that, the father-in-law of Moses. And he came to him and he noticed, the way he was judging Israel, standing all by himself there, and wearing out, and told him, hey, that's not good, that's not a good idea. You see? And he told him how to do it. And Moses didn't say, no, wait a minute, no, you forget something. I'm Moses, whom do you think you are? So what? You're my father-in-law, but I'm Moses. I speak to God, first person. Things like that. Well, that's not the attitude of Moses. Not when you're a meek person. Not when you're a humble and an obedient person. Your ego doesn't count. You see, our ego should never come in the way, and if it does, we're idol worshippers. You see, so let's make it very plain. All of us make mistakes, no matter how much we know. For different reasons, you know. Sometimes we just didn't study enough. Sometimes, you know, we misunderstand certain words, and, you know, slip of the tongue, or whatever it may be. You see, sometimes you speak fast, you know, you just forget certain things, and you don't say it right, and so forth. Well, that's when we are stepping in that position of the lawgiver, but not our own opinion, concept, and idea. He says, look, you know, this is what God says, you see, and you know, you said it otherwise, and maybe you didn't mean it that way, whatever it may be. Well, this is what God says, you see, in the spirit of humility and humbleness and meekness, you sit down and take care of that. No problem. And so Moses says, okay, I'm not going to rely to my own understanding. He says, stay you, that I may hear what the Eternal will command concerning you. That's what lawgiver means. You see, a lot of people don't know that. So they do their own thing. And, you know, when people come to ministers to ask for this and that and the other thing, they just sit down and begin to pontificate and speak their own mind. A lot of people, you know, in the past many, many years, several decades, you know, being in the ministry, would come to me and say, what's your opinion about that? I said, hey, my opinion is neither here nor there. Now, you want me to tell you what the law of God says, what God said about it? That's a different story. You don't want to hear my opinion. You see, I don't want you to follow my opinion. I'm not, you know, the lawgiver of my own self. So, when we do it, we're on the safe ground. You see? And so Moses said, well, let's be on the safe ground. Let's go to God. See what he has to say about it. You know, he's the lawgiver. You know, I'm just a messenger boy in that sense. Just passing on what God had said. And all of us are messenger boys. And when we forget that, then pride and haughtiness and arrogance go into our head and we fall. God makes sure that we do fall and our works would crumble. Because God is not interested in this kind of a work where people are idol worshippers to look up to men. And so, he says it very plainly, you stay here, that I may hear what the Lord will command concerning you. And immediately goes to God, right there, is they come to him, you see. And the Lord spoke unto Moses. Well, God is there listening all along. And God is pleased. Right attitude. You see, Moses passes with flying colors. And the people come and ask Moses to let them know what God says. They're not interested in Moses' opinion about it, you see. And everything works in harmony and unity. You see? That's how we all speak the same thing, not our own. People are mixed up, you know, when it comes to this understanding. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel. You know, this is going to be a new law now for all, because of circumstance. This is a law of circumstance, in other words. Under certain conditions, this is what you would do. You see? Other conditions, it's not necessary. So he says, speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if any man of you or of your generations will be, you know, at any given time, will be unclean by reason of a dead body or be in a journey afar off. So God now adds to it, beside a dead body, if you just happen to be, you know, you're a merchant and you travel and you're stuck. You cannot make it home for Passover. For whatever reason, you see, and you're in a journey afar off. Yet he shall keep the Passover unto the Lord. So it doesn't make any difference where you are. You see, at the moment, the law is the Passover, the eating of the lamb, the killing of the lamb must be done under, you know, any circumstance. And that's the only holy day that God commanded them to do it. On the others, they didn't have to if they were in these conditions. But for Passover, you must do it. That's what he told them. You do it for all of your generations forever. It is an ordinance forever. And Christ made it very plain. Heaven and earth shall pass, but not one jot or one tittle shall pass from the law. You see? Well, we don't pay attention to it. We, you know, a lot of us have not been doing it for centuries, unfortunately. And so, you know, we do what we can do. You know, a lot of brethren who are faithful, they still go to the store and do what they can do under the circumstances. They buy, you know, a roast of lamb or something like that. And in that they fulfill another responsibility, at least at this point. And verse 11, he says, well, verse 10, he says, no matter where you are, yet you shall keep the Passover unto the Lord. Period. That's the law of God. Never done away with. Still there. You know, he didn't say, you know, you come up with your own little ceremony and eat a tiny little bit of bread and a little drink of wine and call it the Passover. Well, that's a mockery when you think about it. And people have invented it and they've been doing it for centuries and taken for granted. This is what God wanted. Nowhere did he ever give this kind of instructions to keep that kind of a Passover. You see? And that's why the world noticed that the people of God, the Nazarenes, continued to do things exactly in like fashion as the Jews. And they made a statement about it. Jerome wrote it in the 4th century. And there was another one. And, you know, many books of the time. They didn't see any difference between them and the Jews. And so we know that, you know, the church continued and the disciples made it very plain. And then the Apostle Paul made it also very plain when he talked to the congregation in the Corinthians chapter 11. You read it there. He told them, you know, how to eat, you know, properly, you know, the Passover. And to keep it properly, the way they should do it. And so he says, when you get together, you know, to eat, you see, they were eating. It was a meal. It was a Passover meal. And also they had other celebrations that they were doing in commemoration of God, as we mentioned that earlier, in terms of as often as you do it. But in other case, you know, they continue to obey, you know, the law of God. And so we read in verse 11, God says, in the second month, on the 14th day at dusk, again around the same time, they shall keep it, they shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Exactly the same as the first service. And so now they ended up with two Passovers. But what do you mean two Passovers? Well, they could not keep the first one, you could keep the second one. And obviously, as time went by, there were more people, not only these two, three people, whatever they were, you know. Well, we don't know exactly how many there were, but, you know, certain people came to him and told him that. And so that became part of the law of Israel. And so they could have two Passovers. It's not that they were keeping two Passovers. It's just those who could not keep it the first Passover on the right time were allowed to keep it the second one. And it's very interesting. In the days of Constantine, he was just putting down everything that was Jewish from his point of view. And at one point, you know, in his letter that he wrote to the churches when he was declaring, you know, Easter to be on Sunday, he was saying, you know, look at those stupid Jews, in essence. And he was putting them down. You know, how can you follow them? They're ignorant. They don't know what they're doing. You know, they keep two Passovers. You see? Ignorant. Totally ignorant of the law of God. Ignorant of the lawgiver. Ignorant of the very fact that the one who gave them that law was Jesus Christ. And so, you know, people who did not read the law, and unfortunately, by that time, a lot of the so-called Christians who were not really Christians, they were just, you know, coming for the ride, they knew nothing about the law of God. They didn't study it. By that time, you know, they already developed a lot of animosity and hatred against anything Jewish. The Jews were being persecuted, and, that, you know, even the ones that were faithful did not want to associate with them, with the Jews, because they were otherwise they would be persecuted by the Romans. And they wanted to say, well, you know, we are Gentiles, you know, we're not really Jews, even though they were not in the faith and were baptized and became members of the church, of the body of Christ, and members of the commonwealth of Israel. They began to distance themselves from the Jewish believers. And so by this time, well, Constantine is totally oblivious of the law of God. Nobody studies it. Nobody knows what's in it. You see, and so they just, he looks at the Jews, speaking about the believers in the church, and he says, well, look at those, you know, Jews, you know, they keep two Passovers. You know, what kind of people are these? And that's unfortunate. Well, to this very day, a lot of people are so ignorant, and that's the way they think about it, and they look at certain things that are in the law. They don't read the law, so they don't know it's from the law of God. They see the Jews do it, and they say, oh, that's Jewish. And how many of us among the people of God, the churches of God, have the same attitude like Constantine? And others, you know, a lot of things that we think, well, that's Jewish. What's so Jewish about it? Jesus Christ is the one that gave it. You know, he's the lawgiver. He gave it to Moses. Moses gave it to Israel. There's nothing Jewish about it. Yeah, but it's convenient, you know, if you want to get rid of certain parts of the aspects of the law of God, just call it Jewish and get rid of it. Verse 12, God says, and there shall leave none of it unto the morning, nor break a bone thereof, because after all, he was going to be sacrificed himself, and his bones were not broken. So be it the first Passover or the second. Don't ever do that. You see? Because it's still symbolic of him. According to all the statute of the Passover, they shall keep it. No difference, no changes. But the man that is clean and is not on a journey and forbears to keep the Passover, you know, says, well, I don't want to keep it. I want to kill, you know, I don't want to kill the Passover. You know, I want to do my own thing. God says, that soul shall be cut off from his people. Those who are not willing to eat his flesh and drink his blood, so to speak, will have no life. And look where we are today. We don't know that anymore. We do not study the law. And so Jesus Christ makes it very plain. This is Jesus Christ speaking here, the God of Israel, that a person who deliberately is going to just avoid taking the Passover, eating the Passover itself, not the human invention of it, shall be cut off from his people. Because he brought not the offering of the Lord in its appointed season, that man shall bear his sin. Now, in those days, you know, you brought an offering, you brought it to God. And obviously, nowadays we have no temple, no priesthood, we do not bring this kind of an offerings, but the eating of the Passover continues, and the faithful continue to do it. And some in its, you know, strict way, and you know, the entirety of the lamb as they do in Israel. As a matter of fact, the Middle Eastern community where I grew up continued to do it until recent time. They continue to offer the lamb every year. That was never done away with, you see. And then gradually even that was changed. As I came to Israel, people cannot afford it as much, especially for many years. There was a depression in Israel, and certainly people could not afford to buy a whole lamb. You know, they had to have ways, you know, from the government to make it possible for them to buy it a little bit here and a little bit there. But, you know, the majority could not do it. So they can, you know, discontinued that practice. But some of them continued. Who could afford it, who lived on farms, they continued to do it, and some still do to this very day. And just the majority don't. So symbolically, you know, they just buy a roast, a part of it, and that's what they do. And God says, the person that does it deliberately is going to bear his sin. He's going to be cut off from Israel. And if a stranger shall sojourn, now in verse 14, among you, and will keep the Passover unto the Lord, that is, you know, speaking about the stranger who wants to become a part of the commonwealth of Israel, a grafted one. He's not talking about, you know, just a curious person, just walks by and says, hey, I want to do it too. So, yeah, you have to understand the background here. So if a stranger that lives there and he also wants to be a part of the commonwealth and keep the Passover, according to the statute of the Passover and according to the ordinance thereof, so shall he do. You shall have one statute, both for the stranger and for him that is born in the land. In other words, be it an Israelite or a non-Israelite who wants to become an Israelite, obviously the first thing he has to do is circumcise himself, or else he cannot even come close. And then he should do it exactly, not come up with a new religion, not say, well, this is a religion for us, you know, we are the Gentiles, and this is a religion for you. There is no such a thing with God. It's one law, one book, one doctrine, one faith. You see, that's what men had done with it, confusion. And even among the people of God, they have, you know, they have confusion. Each does it differently. God says, no, one law. I want you to do it only one way, exactly the way I gave it to you. And how many people pay attention to it? If you don't study the law, you wouldn't know what is this law. And so he says to the stranger too, you know, so shall he do. You shall have one statute, one manner of, you know, doing things, both for the stranger and for him that is born in the land. And on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, in the, you know, the cloud covered the tabernacle, even the tent of the testimony, and at even there was upon the tabernacle, as it were, the appearance of fire until the morning. And so it became like that for the rest of the 40 years. Fire at night, cloud by day. So it was, verse 16, always the cloud covered it and the appearance of fire by night. And whenever the cloud was taken up from over the tent, then after that the children of Israel journeyed. And in the place where the cloud abode, there the children of Israel encamped. They followed God. You see, if he stays put, they stay put. If he goes, they go. They don't go their own way. They don't do what they want. You see, he is the one calling the shots. He makes, you know, the decision. Do we go? Do we, you know, we stay here? You know, and they learned obedience. They learned to work, you know, work with their God in everything. And he was in absolute charge of the community of Israel. That is, you know, the ones that obeyed him. Obviously, they were all the rebel rousers that did their own thing, and they paid the penalty for it. And to this very day, that's the same story. Yeah, people do not comprehend and understand. When is it that the cloud takes off and then begins to move and we're supposed to follow? You see? And when is it that we're supposed to stay put? We do our own things. We're not even in communication with God, not in tune with him, and we do not know. Now, there's a time when God says, okay, let's go. Let's get out of here. And we go somewhere else. And people don't realize that. And spiritually speaking, God told us. And when people begin to do wrong against the law of God and pervert it and dement it and pollute it and all that, that's the time the cloud takes off. And we must follow it. A lot of people don't know it. So they just stick around. You see? And they become a part of the new pollution. Well, that's unfortunately the fate of many who gave in and do not know and are not in tune with God and do not know when the cloud takes off, you see, to follow it wherever it goes. And so we read in verse 18, at the commandment of the Lord, the children of Israel journeyed, and at the commandment of the Lord, they encamped. Well, if you do not listen to God, how would you know? And as long as the cloud abode upon the tabernacle, they remained encamped. And when the cloud carried, that is tarried upon the tabernacle many days, then the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and journeyed not. Simple. That's the simplicity in Christ. Just follow him. You see? That's what Paul says. Follow me as I follow Christ. Well, how would you know that he follows Christ unless you check on him and go to the book of the law, you know, the instructions, and read it for yourself so you know. Now you can follow man. Why? Because that man follows God. Not because he said he follows God, but because he does, because you checked on him. You see? So in essence, you're not really following man, you're following God. That's what Moses constantly made very plain for them. You come to me with a question, I want you to realize that. I'm not going to invent my own ideas and concepts and give it to you. You see? I'm going to ask God, whatever he tells me, I'll tell you. So they all knew that. Moses never speaks his own mind. You see, he speaks the mind of God. And that's what, you know, it's called the law of Moses. It's really the law of Jesus Christ, who spoke through Moses. And this is what happened here. And so, they followed God and they kept the charge of God. And they journeyed not. And that's the way we should learn to be likewise in our own lives, whatever we do. And so the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord. And so we continue now in verse 20. And sometimes the cloud was a few days upon the tabernacle, according to the commandment of the Eternal. They remained encamped. And so God was the one that always would give the orders to either proceed or stay. Everything was guided and directed by him. In other words, he was the king, the ruler, the Lord of hosts, the general, the commander. You see, it was not Moses, it was not the leaders of Israel, it was always him. You see, he's the husband, in other words, he's the head of the wife. Nowadays, this is a strange idea for most wives, because people are not being taught properly, and we have departed so far from it that an awful lot of wives would have taken a great offense at that. That's why a lot of women nowadays, you know, whenever they get married, they don't like to see that word there, to obey. And yet, that's exactly what God commanded his wife, Israel, to obey him. And that's what he commanded the wife, to obey the man. We're not talking about obedience of foolish things, you know, wrong things. And so, when the family functions together, you know, the children see the mother obeying the father. And they see the father loving the mother, you know, and function properly and rightly. So it's not a problem when you think about it. And all that comes because of abuse, unfortunately. And so they obeyed the commandment of the Lord at all times. They remained encamped, and according to the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. So they never said, well, let's go. Now Moses said, well, I think it's about time you move. You know, we're sick and tired of this place. They had to wait on God for everything. Verse 21, and sometimes the cloud was from evening until morning. In other words, only one day. You know, they arrived there at night. In the morning, God says, let's continue. And when the cloud was taken up in the morning, they journeyed, or if it continued by day and by night, when the cloud was taken up, they journeyed. So all along, God is really, when you think about it, He's testing them. Are they going to obey Him? Are they going to do their own thing? You see? And God is testing us all along, all the time, to see what we're made of. Are we doing our own thing? Are we making our own decisions? Are we doing whatever we do and think as unto ourselves or as unto the Lord? Is there an input there from God? Or do we do our own things? The majority of people by nature do their own things. And if we constantly do not bring ourselves under subjection, as Paul would say to the Corinthians, 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5, I believe, he says that we have to cast down every imagination and everything that stands, you know, against and exalts itself against God, bringing every thought, you see, everything that we do, into subjection to Jesus Christ. And this is what the Israelites had to do here. He said, go, they go. And he said, don't, they don't. It's as simple as that. That's what it means, thy will be done. Verse 22, whether it were 2 days, or a month, or a year, that the cloud tarried upon the tabernacle, abiding thereon, the children of Israel remained encamped, and journeyed not. When it was taken up, they journeyed. After all, you have to realize that too. The livelihood depended on the cloud. You see, the manna came every day, and the quail. And if they do not follow the cloud, if they take off on their own, there isn't going to be any food to eat there. You see? So in essence, they were tied down to that. But God wants us to do it by faith. You see? Not just because He feeds us or He doesn't. And so this is our lesson for us. And so they just had to remain there until they learned obedience. And then it was just natural after a while. You know, the cloud is still there. They stay. They don't even think about moving. And as soon as it moves, they all pack up and take off and go. Now, once you get into this habit of obedience, that you do it by nature. That doesn't bother you anymore. But if we constantly continue to let our will be done instead of the will of God, well, we constantly have a struggle. You see? And once we are conquered, so to speak, by God, we don't struggle anymore. Whatever He says, we do. You see? Makes it very simple. Verse 23, at the commandment of the Eternal they encamped, and at the commandment of the Eternal they journeyed. They kept the charge of the Eternal at the commandment of the Eternal by the hand of Moses. So Moses was only the conduit. He was not truly, you know, truly the leader. God was. God was a husband. You see, He was a giver of life. He was a giver, literally, of life in terms of food. He fed them every day. And so they obviously had to depend on Him, just like a little child. You see little children, you know, wherever the mother is, you know, they go with their mother, you know. They're not going to take off on their own, you know, unless they're rebel rousers, you know, little brats. Some kids are that way. And we go now to chapter 10 and verse 1. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, make you 2 trumpets of silver. Now the word trumpets here is not the word that is used earlier for trumpet, because in English they use trumpet for both, but they should have used ram's horn, you see, trumpet. And it's a little bit confusing to people. So when they see trumpet all over the place, you know, they generally oftentimes think about this kind of a trumpet, which is made of metal. You know, it's handmade, in other words. It's not the natural thing that grows out of the head of a ram. And so God says, you make to yourself 2 trumpets of silver of beaten work. You shall make them, and they shall be unto you for the calling of the congregation and for the causing of the camps to set forward. You know, that makes it very easy. Instead of, you know, when the cloud takes off, you know, people begin to yell all over the place, and obviously it makes it more awkward that way. But if you sound the trumpet, one person can arouse the whole congregation, and the sound of it travels. And so that was very obvious decision. And something that makes sense, and something that is good for all of Israel, and will make things easier for them. So that's the reason why God gives them because now we are talking about the beginning of the journey. You see, up to now they were in Mount Sinai, so they didn't need it. Now that they're going to be moving and stopping and moving and stopping, obviously, this was the time. In other words, at the right time, God tells you what you need at the time. And they don't need it, you know, from the beginning, long before that, when they really there was no need for it. As they came out of Egypt, they just continued to walk all the time, and they just camped for the night. And so they get more organized now. That's what God tells them to do. So it shall be for the causing of the camps to set forward, calling the of the congregation, that is. And when they shall blow with them, all the congregation shall gather themselves unto you at the door of the tent of meeting. It does not mean that the entirety of the nation just comes and stands there by the door. What it means is that they're all getting, you know, get up, get ready, and look toward the tent where Moses would stand and give the instructions, which would be passed on through the leaders of Israel to all the nation of Israel. After all, you're talking about one man speaking without a microphone, and millions of people, you see, are listening. So you have to understand, you know, the scriptures from that point of view also. Verse 3. We read that, and then verse 4. And if they blow but with one, then the princes, the heads of the thousands of Israel, shall gather themselves unto you. So there has to be a distinction here, and that's how they knew who was supposed to be summoned to the tent. And verse 5, and when you blow an alarm, the camps that lie on the east side shall take the journey. So they had to have special sounds for each one of them, and obviously after a while they learned which is which, and they knew what to do. And so the one on the east means Judah, and the two tribes on both sides have to get ready, because they're the first one that are going to move forward. You see, Judah was always the first one to move forward. And as they encamped, Judah was behind the priests, which were right next to the tabernacle. And as they traveled, Judah was in the forefront, and then the priests were behind him, and the tabernacle right behind them. And that's the way it worked. And it says, when you blow an alarm, the second time the camps that lie on the south side shall set forward, and they shall blow an alarm for their journeys, and so forth. And you know, then it would be the camp on the west, and then the camp on the north. And so they, in essence, went around in the order, as we read before that, you know, the order of the offerings that they gave, you know, beginning with the east and going south, and then going west and the north. But when the assembly is to be gathered together, you shall blow, but you shall not sound an alarm. And the sons of Aaron the priest shall blow with the trumpets, it was up to them to do it, and there shall be to you for a statute forever throughout your generations. So now they are in the wilderness, it's going to be used for certain things in terms of traveling, but later on obviously they were going to use for other things. And to this very day, had they been still in the land of Israel, these trumpets would have been used for that purpose. Verse 9, and when you go to war in your land against the adversary that oppressed you, then you shall sound an alarm with the trumpets, and it shall be remembered before the Eternal your God. It's not that God doesn't remember them without the sound of the alarm, but you know, they're acknowledging the fact that He is their God, and they obey Him and they look to Him, and so He remembers them. That means He's mindful of what's happening. He knows to begin with, and so it's sort of summoning the general, you know, the Lord of Hosts, the captain, the chief of staff, to his post, his office, and you shall be saved from your enemies. Also, in the day of your gladness, so we have the second purpose for it. Once it's traveling, you see, generally speaking, and then you know there are different variations there, and then well, for the princes. And then, you know, the different camps, and now they stand for war. And then the last one here is about holidays. So it has many uses for it, for these two trumpets. Also in the day of your gladness and in your appointed seasons. You see, when you have an appointment with God, and they had an appointment with God, on the Sabbath, every Sabbath. They said they had an appointment with God. That's on a weekly basis. And then they had the appointed seasons in terms of the other seven Sabbaths that they had, beginning with the first Sabbath that begins the days of unleavened bread, with the Passover. That was the first Sabbath. From the Passover to the next day, that's the first day, the 15th, which begins obviously the evening before that, where the Passover is taken. And so that's the first Sabbath. So on all these things, and days of gladness, there could be beside the holy days, you know, days of gladness for different reasons. As you go through the history of Israel, you find out about days of gladness. Purim is one of them. Hanukkah is one of them. There were many others. At different occasions, you read about it in the Judges and the Kings, where they had special celebrations of deliverance and victory, and, you know, things like that. And in your appointed seasons, I guess, you know, maybe some people may have used it, and that's how the custom began, for the clansmen, you know, and the tribes and all that, and down to our day to be using trumpets. They use it for different occasions, you know, the king is coming, or weddings, and, you know, all kind of things like that. So this became a general term in days of gladness. And so you have the days of gladness, which is a general one. Then you have the appointed seasons. That's talking about the seven Sabbaths of the holy days. And in the new moon. So an awful lot of blowing of the trumpets. And so he says, in the new moon also you should blow the trumpet over your burnt offerings. You see, the priests are the ones that are doing it, so they're doing it in the temple. That is, in the tabernacle, and later on it was in the temple. And this shall be to you for a memorial before your God. I am the Eternal, your God. And we spoke about this concept of memorial that was misunderstood by some who had no good knowledge of the law. They came to a certain place where Christ was saying, this do in memory of me. And they said, ah, memory, memorial, memorial day, you know, once a year. You see? Well, had they been raised on the law like Timothy from a youth, that thought would not have entered their minds. You see, and they would realize a lot of things, you know, a lot of concepts of memorial, and the majority of them are not on a yearly basis. You see, here it is, every Sabbath day, every new moon, every holy day, every day of gladness. You see, every time they go to war, every time they call the camp, every time they call the princes, and they're all called memorial. You see, Zikaron, or some places it's called Askara. And Askara is a very word, very term that is used for the yearly, you see, commemoration of the dead. You know, Memorial Day, you would say. You know, people have, Jewish community, they still do to this very day, every year in the synagogue or at home, they have a special meal. They call it the memorial meal for the father that died, or the mother, or whatever it may be. And obviously they don't die the same day, so you have different time, though it is done once a year, you see, but it's once a year for the father, and then once a year for the mother, then once a year, you know, for this and that, and the other person, grandfather and great-grandmother, you see what I mean? You end up with many of them, even though it is done once a year. Still many of them. And because of no knowledge and understanding of that, unfortunately, you know, someone along the line, several decades ago, came up with this idea that what Christ was talking about in memory of me, that's supposed to be done only on Passover night, and as it is, they were keeping it a day before that, once a year. That's not what he was talking about. That's why he made it very plain. As often as you do it, you know, and when you study this law of God, as it came out of the mouth of God, your knowledge expands. And you understand what you hear. Instead of having a narrow-minded comprehension, and then based on that, you come up with an understanding, just like some people think. Well, in heaven, Mama, what does it mean, heaven? You go up to heaven. Elijah went up to heaven. That's a narrow-minded comprehension. You see? When you understand the full scope of what it means to go to heaven, you realize anybody, people who go to work every day, they go up to heaven. You know, you're in Los Angeles, they go up to heaven, and they land in San Francisco, they come down from heaven. You see? And that's what happens oftentimes. A little knowledge is very dangerous. And unfortunately, when you have zeal, which is not according to God, you see, zeal is good, but if it's not according to knowledge, obviously you come up with your own ideas. And that's unfortunately the problem of many people, and that's how many sects and denominations and divisions occur. You see, not people who have a thorough knowledge of the Word of God before they speak. So here we have another case of it, and we've seen already many of those before that, and you're going to see many more. So you can comprehend what this concept of Zikaron is, and then hopefully as you keep studying the Bible after that and you read the words of the apostles of Jesus Christ, you begin to understand what they are talking about, and you have a fullness of comprehension in contrast to the narrow-minded concepts that people had had before that, for the simple reason because they had very little knowledge, and little knowledge is very dangerous at times. And so this is what he's saying here. You're going to do it, you know, and over the sacrifices. Well, the sacrifices, they had a lot of sacrifices, you see. And he said you do it for memorial. So don't compare it to Memorial Day. This is just one concept of it, you see. Well, anyway, we'll stop at this point. Again, Mordecai Joseph, greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.